On the morning of November 9th, Americans woke up to the news that we had had a massive earthquake the day before that was felt the world over. Our 45th president had been elected, and for many millions, the outcome was as unanticipated and devastating as a natural disaster. All progress on social issues that had been painstakingly made would soon be wiped away. Decades of work for women's reproductive rights and protections for people in the LGBTQ and other vulnerable communities would be toppled. Policies and agencies established to protect the environment and help slow climate change would be reduced to rubble. Though it was not a literal earthquake, for many people it may well have been. In the aftershocks, as some of the dust began to settle, we discovered that a massive chasm had opened in the ground between those who wholeheartedly supported our new president and those who most certainly did not. We find ourselves now living in a nation divided. Communities and families have been split in two. Lifelong friends who love one another deeply find they now look at one another with disbelief, unsure of whether their friendship will be strong enough to withstand the pressure of their now obvious differing ideologies. I know because several of you have talked with me about it that this has been a heart-wrenching experience for many people in this congregation. It's not just that we as a society disagree on politics. Americans have always had disagreements about what is most important and the role of the government. But the split between liberals and conservatives has become more and more intense in recent years. I discovered a book that is helping me understand this division. It's called Strangers in Their Own Land, Anger and Mourning on the American Right. Author Arlie Russell Hochschild writes, in 1960, when a survey asked American adults whether it would disturb them if their child married a member of the other political party, no more than 5% of either party said yes. But in 2010, 33% of Democrats and 40% of Republicans answered yes. In fact, partyism, as some call it, now beats race as the source of divisive prejudice. And I can only imagine what the percentages would look like now if the same survey were asked today. With this most recent election, the conflict between the right and the left has taken on an altogether new flavor. There is an angry, divisive tension in the air. The stakes are higher, and somehow everything feels more dire. Where even a year or two ago, we might have been able to decide to politely avoid political conversations with our friends and coworkers with whom we have fundamental disagreements, this new administration has upped the ante. Trump's words and actions make it clear that he has a vast majority of us in his crosshairs. As a result, people who have never felt especially moved to speak out or to join a protest march have suddenly come to realize that they have some skin in the game. This gulf is deep and wide, and people on either side are having difficulty finding a bridge back to one another. It's scary and painful when the ground opens up like this and we discover rifts that lie between us and those that we love. We long to find a way to heal our separation, but heal we must, both on the individual level and as a nation. But how? I've talked with many of you in the congregation, as well as my own friends and family and colleagues, and most of us share similar values and political leanings, so our reactions have been very alike. One of the most common responses has been confusion and disorientation. We ask ourselves and one another, how is it possible that so many people in our nation don't share the same core values that I do? How could they have voted for and still support A white supremacist sexual assault perpetrator who denies climate change is blatantly Islamophobic and refuses to prove that he is not personally profiting from the presidency. I found it immensely helpful to learn about moral foundations theory from their website, moralfoundations.org. The theory was created by a group of social and cultural psychologists to help them understand morality, why it can vary so much across cultures and yet still shows so many similarities and recurrent themes. Their theory is that all human beings hold innate and universal psychological systems that form several foundations of intuitive ethics. And these foundations are, one, care and harm. This foundation is related to our long evolution as mammals with attachment systems and an ability to feel and dislike the pain of others. It underlies virtues of kindness, gentleness, and nurturance. The second foundation is fairness and cheating. This foundation is related to the evolutionary process of reciprocal altruism. It generates ideas of justice, rights, and autonomy. The third one is loyalty and betrayal. This foundation is related to our long history as tribal creatures able to form shifting coalitions. It underlies virtues of patriotism and self-sacrifice for the group. And it's active anytime you hear people saying one for all and all for one. The next foundation is authority and subversion, and this one was shaped by our long primate history of hierarchical social interactions, and it underlies virtues of leadership and followership, including deference to legitimate authority and respect for traditions. And the last one is sanctity and degradation, and this foundation was shaped by the psychology of disgust and contamination. It underlies the religious notions of striving to live in an elevated, less carnal, more noble way. It underlies the widespread idea that the body is a temple, which can be desecrated by immoral activities and contaminants. So as I dug a little deeper, I came upon a fascinating article called From Gulf to Bridge, When Do Moral Arguments Facilitate Political Influence? The authors are social psychologists Matthew Feinberg and Rob Willer. And they found that political liberals possess stronger moral convictions related to fundamental aspects of harm and fairness. So, for example, benevolence, nurturance, equality, and social justice. And conservatives possess stronger convictions related to group loyalty, authority, and purity. So, for example, patriotism, traditionalism, strictness, and religious sanctity. It's because of these underlying differences in their moral commitments that liberals and conservatives tend to view the world through completely different moral lenses, which is why they have such contrasting viewpoints on morally charged issues. What they found, too, is that people on either side of the divide will tend to speak past the other, advocating for a given position in the moral terms that they themselves find most convincing. So for the study, they hypothesized that when trying to persuade their political counterparts on an issue, both liberals and conservatives will use moral arguments that reflect their own rather than their audience's moral values. But if they reframed their moral arguments to appeal to the audience's moral values, they would be more persuasive. It makes sense that we would be more effective in reaching across the divide to our conservative friends and family members if we can learn to reframe the issues in language that resonates with their moral stance rather than restate our own moral arguments over and over again. So in preparation for this sermon, I skimmed through a book, I read a number of articles and essays, I watched several TED Talks and some Saturday Night Live skits. They were all aimed at helping those on the political left understand those on the right. They had names like How to Love Those We Disagree With, and Escape the Bubble, and Take the Other to Lunch. based on all of that information, I could have stood here today and said to you that we just need to be more open-minded, compassionate, more understanding about the fact that Trump supporters just have a different moral frame, not better or worse than ours, just different, and we simply have to learn how to speak one another's moral language. And there is some truth to that, but something kept troubling me. And then I read through to the end of that study. The scientists conclude in their research that, quote, conservatism is based fundamentally on the acceptance and legitimation of inequality and the willingness to prioritize the in-group's goals over the welfare of those in the out-group. And those words hit me like a ton of bricks. When we are talking about issues of racism, classism, misogyny, homophobia, transphobia, Islamophobia, and anti-Semitism, we are not talking about two equivalent ways of understanding moral issues from different frames. The truth is that there is a tremendous unhealed wound in our culture that we are not facing. The fundamental wound is patriarchy and white supremacy. It has been simmering just under the surface from the very founding of our nation, and we have not yet begun to heal it. Now, with the implicit permission of a racist and bigoted president, acts of racism and hate crimes have skyrocketed and are becoming more and more blatant. Last Monday, a Jewish cemetery in Philadelphia was found vandalized. In one night, over 100 headstones were broken and knocked over. This just after a week prior, when a Jewish burial site in St. Louis experienced vandalism. There's a new air of vitriol and frighteningly unapologetic displays of racism and anti-Semitism that, at a level that this generation has not experienced. Decades ago, Mother Teresa said, "The problem with the world is that we draw the circle of our family too small." Last Sunday, if you were here, you heard our choir sing a beautiful song, "Draw the Circle Wide," about the power of inclusion and widening our circle of compassion. The sixth of our seven principles that we as Unitarian Universalists covenant to affirm and promote is the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. These are our values. The people who support Trump have drawn a narrow circle around themselves. They do not include refugees in their circle. They do not include immigrants in their circle. They do not include Muslims or people from the LGBT and queer community in their circle. Our mission is to help draw the circle of compassion wider still. And we do that in part by increasing our own capacity for compassion, by listening with care to others who have different views, because listening and loving are intimately connected. In our reading this morning, Thich Nhat Hanh says, "When our hearts are small, our understanding and compassion are limited, and we suffer. We can't accept or tolerate others and their shortcomings, and we demand that they change. But when our hearts expand, these same things don't make us suffer anymore. We have a lot of understanding and compassion and can embrace others. We accept others as they are, and then we have a chance, and then they have a chance to transform." That last line, I think, is the key. When we accept others as they are, they have a chance to transform. Friends, a great earthquake has rumbled through our nation and has shaken all of us awake. We can see clearly now where the foundation is cracked. We can see where healing needs to happen. And as strange as it may sound, I think we should be grateful for this opportunity for transformation. I leave you with one of my favorite poems. It's called "Fault Line" by Robert R. Walsh. "Did you ever think there might be a fault line passing underneath your living room? A place in which your life is lived in meeting and in separating, unaware that just beneath you is the unseen seam of great plates that strain through time, and that your life could be invaded, sent off in a new direction, turned aside by forces you were warned about but not prepared for. Shelves could be spilled out, the level floor set at an angle in some seconds shaking. When the great plates slip and the earth shivers and the flaw is seen to lie in what you trusted most, look not to more solidity, to weighty slabs of concrete poured or strength of cantilevered beam to save the fractured order. Trust more the tensile strands of love that bend and stretch to hold you in the web of life that is often torn, but always healing. There's your strength. The shifting plates, the rest of earth, your precious life, they all proceed from love, the ground on which we walk together. Amen and blessed be.